This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Lots of people getting up in arms about this, so we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the reality of what could actually happen here in the Nick Reiner case. Nick Reiner just filed a 136-page petition demanding over $1.5 million from a trust his parents set up when he was a baby. As my doorbell rings. And here's the uncomfortable part. He might actually have an argument. The petition says the payouts were mandatory at 30 and 35 in terms of years. Bell, it's okay. We're good. Mandatory at 30 and 35. No strings, no discretion. Nick turned 30 more than 2 years before his parents were killed and reportedly never saw a dime of it. So that's the interesting part going into this. This payday would have been 2 years before the murders took place of what he was supposed to get mandatorily. This is the claim that the Nick camp is making. And he wants it. He wants to use it because he wants to hire Alan Jackson back as his representative. And the way it's sitting right now, they're saying, no, you're not getting the money. Eric, let's walk through this. I mean, what sort of grounds does he stand on to get his money?
Reasonably solid grounds, I think, Tony, with respect to the disbursement to which he was entitled at 30. With respect to the 35-year-old disbursement, that's a whole different story. But for the 30-year-old one, that was before any allegation that he had harmed his parents. It preceded that event in time. And so it sounds like he was legally entitled to those funds. For some reason, they were not paid. And it's appropriate to bring a legal action to try to enforce what a trust says and to get those funds.
Yeah, I'm curious, Eric, because I did a lot of research on this morning just because I'm trying to understand trust, why people have trust. Basically, it's for people with a lot of money want to protect their money is the bottom line of it. But I'm really curious because, yeah, they wrote it in. And once the family creates a trust and they created it when he was born, it's like removed from their control. It's tax sheltered. It's entitled to the kids, and they do it. And gradually, as they get older and hopefully more mature, they can use it more more responsibly. So, at what point then? How come the trustee of this and the new trustee came on board? I guess about a year ago from this. How does he even have control when it's actually written into the contract to begin with? So, how could he even withhold it a couple years ago? Even though I know there was issues with his mental health and things like that, but how could he even held it back then?
It's not entirely clear to me what legal authority the trustee would have to withhold those funds. I mean, the trustee in this kind of an irrevocable mandatory trust scenario is really charged with effectuating the terms of that trust. So they sort of do the mechanics of it. They make sure people get paid and I'm not aware of some legal authority this trustee would have to say, for whatever reason, I don't like this guy or his mental health is concerning me or whatever, or his substance use, what have you. I'm just not going to give him these funds. I'm not sure the trustee has that discretion.
Because that actually raised a question with me in the sense of, all right, so because like you said, the language in that trust, I've never seen this one, but doing the research on them in general, it's very solid, rock solid. It is what it is. Could he then become in legal jeopardy for it actually not executing it according to the timeline?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's sort of, it could be just a general negligence theory that, hey, you had a duty under this trust to disperse these funds, and you ought to have, and you didn't. And now this person is out all of this money, and perhaps Nick has suffered other claimed losses from the non-disbursement. And that trustee could be in a precarious situation.
And one more before I bounce back, Tony, so sorry. So, again, my conjecture hat is on. This is what happens when I'm away for a couple of days, right? So Alan Jackson said he's willing to be back on the case now that there's money back on the table. And he didn't say that first time, but we said it was probably because of money. So is there a possibility that Nick, now can he do this when he's, you know, being charged with this, could file a civil lawsuit against the trustee that Alan Jackson could then also do to get money from, like, both from the trust as well as a civil lawsuit from withholding?
hard to say. Alan Jackson might have some kind of conflict because he is set to gain from the proceeds of such an action,
right.
Such that he couldn't be an objective legal counsel on it. So I'm not sure if he could do that, but I can see why he might want to.
Right.
Are we staring at motive for murder here? The fact that he didn't get his money 2 years before he murdered them?
Oh, wow.
Look wow. That yeah, that's that hadn't even occurred to me. You know, I don't know how much money is in controversy here, but we're talking about Rob Reiner, a famed
producer,
director, and actor for decades. I bet it's a lot of money. And if a person was out, you know, seven figures or more, they'd be pretty peeved. And they that could compel them to take some action based on that feeling.
I'm wondering, because we've been sitting here going, why did he do this? Well, he's, you know, mentally ill. He's got this schizoaffective disorder. It's this, it's that. Yeah, he probably didn't get his money, is what it seems to look like here. 2 years before, you're supposed to get your $1.5 million. It's a lot of drugs he can buy with that for a period of time. It seems like this may be making a lot of sense now when you kind of line it up with the broken brain, the thinking. I mean, him still living at home with his parents up until the end. I could see Nick thinking, I'm going to play the game. Eventually, I'll get that. And I wonder how much of a carrot on a stick this money was that was being dangled up by mom and dad. You need to stay with us. You need to get clean. And then you'll get your money. You just need to do this. And then we'll trust you with it. I mean, this is all my conjecture, but I'm thinking this may lead to some very interesting roads to go down. And if it does go down that road, not that there's ever a justification for murder, but I am wondering if this is going to be, you know, brought up. It's not like, I don't know that they're going to be able to argue that Nick didn't do this. It's pretty clear he did, but what are the circumstances to which he did it under? Why did he do it? When, I mean, you don't have to prove motive, but if you're trying to sway a jury in one way or another, he's mentally ill, he needs help, and then his parents are withholding this money, and then he lashed out and killed them.
So it's interesting. So, Eric, based on that, and that's a really interesting thing to bring up, Tony. So legally, because it looked like there was an argument inside the house, and that's what the conjecture is. Mm-hmm. There's a fight, an argument, but never really an understanding, because they're just claiming mental illness and all the garbage going on in his brain. And that's what Alan Jackson said he's going to do is claim, you know, by means of insanity. But they're always looking for a triggering event. Could they use this then as a triggering event as saying, hey, he didn't get this? And would that help or hinder defense or the prosecution?
Yeah, it doesn't matter, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in thinking about it, it seems like it wouldn't help the defense in a not guilty by reason of insanity defense, because in that defense, you're arguing, hey, he didn't know right from wrong. You know, sometimes those folks are under delusions and hallucinations, and they don't know what they're doing. They can't control their faculties, things like that. But if you have a concerted plan, if you have a sequence of events, like this guy got pissed off because he was entitled to more than $1 million and realized his parents were withholding it wrongfully from him, and then he went after his parents because of that. That seems to suggest he does know right from wrong. He did know what he was doing. He did this on purpose, and it seems to undercut a potential not guilty by reason of insanity.
Yeah. This could be really good for prosecution. Yeah, I see someone put it in there. Yeah, $1,600 to $2,000 per hour. I saw that. And so Alan Jackson typically looks for $250,000 as a retainer fee. And so Nick Reiner is due $750,000 if he ruins the lawsuit for half the conservatorship that he should have gotten already. The rest of it, it's actually can be withheld because you can't profit from the death of, in other words, if you are the cause of death of someone, you can't get their inheritance.
Yeah.
And so that's why the other half's being held up.
I mean, and we'll get to that in a moment what sort of levers the family can pull here. But it does make you wonder a lot about what, you know, what are the motivating factors here? And is this something, I mean, is Nick Reiner a prime example of why maybe mom and dad or whoever has the money and has reproduced a spawn and thinks, you know what, I got some money, I'm going to start a trust right now so when they're older they can have it. There's a lot of assumption that goes on when you create a trust for someone who's a very small child. And there's not a lot of control you have at a certain point of those funds should said person not be as upstanding of an individual as you might have hoped they would become when they were three. At the end of the day, a lot of these trusts are exactly what the law says it is. It's yeah, you get your money. Good luck. And a lot of people use it to destroy their own lives. And mom and dad or whoever set it up have very little legal leverage to stop it. But it looks like they had some leverage to stop it here for those several years. I mean, and that can just be simply, we're not making the transaction. Legally, we have to, but we're not going to. You're going to take a court to force us to do it. And if you got the addict or the junkie who doesn't have the legal means on their side to fight for that, well, then it doesn't get transferred, illegal or not. I'm wondering, you know, is this a lesson of being more cautious of blindly putting money into a trust? I get the tax benefits of it. It makes sense. It's ways that you can save money for children and not have it taxed. It is very advantageous. It's a great mechanism, but there's a lot of assumption going on that person's going to be able to handle it at a certain age. Should this be reevaluated in general, or is it, you know, you roll the dice?
Yeah, Tony, you know, I think most of us have encountered like a trust fund baby. It just at some point in our lives. And some of them are doing great and they're prosperous and productive. And some of them are the opposite. Some of them are just sort of coasting through life. They have money and they are destroying their bodies, destroying their minds, not working, you know, getting into drugs, things like that. And so I think that, you know, it's fun to be like optimistic in the beginning and say, oh, you know, this kid's going to be great. But what they should consider is building more discretion for the trustee into these trusts. Mm-hmm. My understanding is this one for the Reiners was pretty mandatory and obligatory. There wasn't really a lot of leeway that anyone would have legally to say, hey, we don't want to give you the money. Perhaps you could build in those conditions that say like, hey, if the person's experiencing with contending with substance use at 30, then the trustee their discretion could withhold the payments. I think you could build those provisions in, don't often see them.
Yeah, I guess that's the question. Like, can that stuff be built into a structure like that? Or, I mean, it's probably like a financial attorney type question because you're getting into tax law and stuff as well with that as far as the restrictions of giving that money out or that person taking their money at a certain point. I know there's different repercussions for withdrawing. You know, it's like withdrawing early from a 401k or something. There are certain structures with these trusts that exist with the IRS that, so I wonder, I don't know the answer to it or if like we can reject giving this to you, but then you're going to, whoever made the trust will then face the financial penalties from the government for tax. I don't know, but it would be nice if there were more provisions that existed to protect someone that needs protecting. But then again, you go down the rabbit hole too of people who just don't want to give their money out at some point or they're being petty and like, I want this money for myself. You didn't do this. Or you didn't. There's a lot of reasons this could be abused as well. So if you go down the road of, well, let's tighten it up for a situation like Nick, then it also completely changed the dynamics for all the other situations out there that are probably far greater than his.
Yeah, it's interesting. So what I did, just because of all the issues surrounding this, I looked it up beforehand, and it's 40% of all probate cases in LA County involve trust disputes and litigation. 35% involve allegations of undue influence. 25% center on claims of lack of capacity, and over 75% are driven by undue influence, lack of capacity, fraud, improper trust administration. It's riddled with all these issues. And as I understood, and Eric, I don't know if you had an opportunity to take a deeper look at this. I just did a cursory of the trust that they set up. It's totally inflexible. Is that the way these things work? Is that it, once it's established, it's inflexible? Because I guess that's how they do the check. Shelter of it is it's when it's completely out of the hands of those who had the money to begin with, they're no longer responsible or culpable financially for it.
Yeah, Robin, it seems like the trade-off that's happening in a trust like this are that if the funds are protected from tax consequences for a substantial period of time under the essentially the guarantee that at some point they are going to be dispersed. And at some point there might be additional tax and financial ramifications because of that. So I can understand why perhaps flexibility on these trusts is disfavored, because a person could put all this money in a trust, not have it taxed, and then when the payday right. comes, they could say, I don't want to do this, and I'm coming up with some excuse, and the government's not going to get their money. And so I could see how flexibility might be disfavored under these sort of financial vehicles.
Yeah.
Lots of questions. What can the Reiner family do? What are Jake and Romy looking at in terms of what they can do to protect their money, to protect themselves, and at the end of the day, protect their brother who is not able to really make sound decisions? And that's an opinion. That's the important part. That is an opinion. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We're going to get all into that in our next segment. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.